Welcome to Behind the Story, a program where we take you straight to the source. In this special episode, we'll hear an interview with author Grace Tiffany, whose most recent book, Gunpowder Percy, was reviewed on KWBU's Likely Stories. Conducting the interview is Likely Stories host Jim McKeown. This conversation was recorded August 2nd in the KWBU studio.
I'm Jim McKeown. Welcome to Likely Stories, a weekly review of fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and biographies, and, as now, an occasional interview. Grace Tiffany is the author of six works of historical fiction set in the Renaissance. These include Paint, about the Dark Lady of Shakespeare's sonnets, My Father Had a Daughter, about Shakespeare's sibling, and her latest work, Gunpowder Percy, which describes the plot to kill King James I and his family. She also has several scholarly works on Shakespeare. Grace currently teaches at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. I recently talked with Grace about her career. Grace, welcome to KWBU down here, and we thank WMUK for their assistance in taping your end of this. I'd like to start off with a question. When did you first recognize your love of writing?
Well, thank you, Jim. Let me first say that I don't have scholarly works on the Middle Ages. I probably should correct that for my medievalist friends. My area is the Renaissance, so it's the early modern period.
Okay.
But having said that, to answer your question, I've always written things, and I'm not the kind of person who has always written stories from a young age, but I've always just written all kinds of various things like letters and the sorts of things that you have to read when you become that you have to write when you become an academic, essays and scholarly work. But as far as more imaginative work, I used to write science fiction stories, I guess, starting in my 20s. I wrote some really bad science fiction stories because I've always been a big lover of science fiction. But I didn't start writing the kind of things I write now, the kind of fictional work I write now, until I became really interested in Shakespeare and the Elizabethan and Jacobean period. And I got really interested in Renaissance characters, and so much as we know about their biographies, different sorts of literary characters, and especially cultural trends and ideas that were important in that time. So my first book had a lot to do with, it was about Shakespeare and his fellow actors. It had a lot not just to do with him personally, but with the whole idea of the theater in the Renaissance and what it was for and what kinds of things tragedy and comedy could do for people, and this kind of social phenomenon that was the theater. And my more recent book, Gunpowder Percy, is about politics and religion right around that same time, the Reformation and all kinds of upheavals that were going on in England as a result of this national shift from Catholicism to Protestantism. So it's the ideas that got me interested in writing fiction and just kind of manifesting or exploring those ideas in a way that was creative as well as scholarly.
Yeah. Well, I'm also, as you know, I'm also an English professor down here in Texas, and the Renaissance has always fascinated me. And the gunpowder plot was something I found really interesting, and I really enjoyed your version of it. Did anything in particular draw you to this one as your latest work?
Well, it's a pre-made, exciting story about terrorism and thwarted political violence, you know, so all of that's really good. It's one thing I like about it is that there's something skeletal about the story, by which I mean that they know a kind of limited amount about the motives and the lives of the men and the women who were involved in this plot, which for a writer of fiction is great because you get to develop that and create that and not exactly be lying, be just kind of conjecturing about what things must have been like for them, what kinds of youthful experiences and domestic pressures and public pressures went into the formation of this conspiracy that became the plot. So That all seemed good. You know, it seemed like a page turner. It seemed potentially entertaining. And also, like I said, I've just become really interested in politics and religion at that time in English history. Mm-hmm. And here we have, right at the beginning of the 17th century, this major, it's a kind of like a major non-event in a way. It's because it's this plot to this terrorist plot that didn't come off, but it's kind of it's become a major important episode in American history, or not American history, rather English history, that it didn't come off. And so it seemed like a good thing to explore. And there's also a kind of a Shakespeare connection, and I always like it when there's a Shakespeare connection. It's a shadowy connection, but we can pretty much determine that in at least one of Shakespeare's plays, he was at least responding to the gunpowder plot. And right. So then that makes it interesting to conjecture what he might have thought about it, or what others might have thought about Shakespeare.
Yeah, I found Gunpowder Percy really interesting. And I knew, you know, kind of just the basic things about it. But getting into the minds of the people and what motivated them, I thought I found the most interesting part of that. And I'm looking forward to your next one.
One more thing about that. The thing that interested me most was that I was aware that in the early 17th century, some of Shakespeare's history plays were interesting and exciting to disaffected, ambitious English gentlemen who were interested in some sort of regime change. And I thought, why not? Why wouldn't these history plays also have influenced the thinking of these disaffected Catholics? So that was one thing I wanted to explore.
Yeah. I read a couple of years ago now, Will in the World, and he hinted that Shakespeare may have been more favorable to the Catholic side. I found that really interesting in his book there.
Yeah, nobody knows. Nobody knows. No. And that's one thing that makes fiction is really the domain to explore that sort of thing rather than biography. I think you're talking about Stephen Greenblatt's book,
right?
And it really is something that people tend to look at Shakespeare's plays and try to infer a whole lot of stuff about what Shakespeare thought from what the characters in the plays are saying, which is something of a denial of the way the creative imagination works. Because you can imagine anything, and you create characters, and the characters aren't you. They're people that you imagine. And so you can find all kinds of ideas, and you can sort of famously find justification for any sort of thinking in Shakespeare's plays because they're so rich and diverse, and they have so many characters arguing with each other. So you really can prove everything and nothing by looking at Shakespeare's plays. But you can imagine everything, and therefore, why not write some fiction about it?
Right. Well, I think that's why I think these appeal to me. The other two of yours that I read, what I mentioned in the intro there, Paint and My Father Had a Daughter, I just found those stories endlessly fascinating. And while it is fiction, still they are really very interesting. Which writer or writers have had the greatest influence on your writing? Obviously Shakespeare, but.
Yeah, well, I hope Shakespeare has. I mean, my basic principle is that you read really good writers and that you hope some of it's going to rub off on you. As far as conscious imitation, I try to pull a lot of stuff out of Renaissance authors when I create Renaissance characters because I try to get the kind of rhythms and idiom of their speech from the primary material. But as far as just kind of general influences, an influence of the way I think about writing, C.S. Lewis is probably the author whose writing I think about most, not just his ideas, and I'm mostly talking about his nonfiction, but his extremely clear, precise, and grammatical and illuminating way of expressing his ideas is something that I think everyone should aspire to, just write that in that sort of a down-to-earth and clear way. I like Borges a lot. Mm-hmm. And I like his dedication to plot. I mean, he's got all these really short stories that you don't know a lot of detail about character and, you know, place, but they've got these compelling plots. And this is probably going to sound like a very weird one, but a very early but profound influence on what the way I think about fiction is the short story writer O. Henry, which I read, you know, when I was really young. My parents had this book of O. Henry short stories, and those I think were the first, I guess, kind of grown-up short stories I ever read. And if you've read O. Henry, you know he always has a surprise ending.
Uh-huh. Every time.
Well, and that's what I thought a short story was then. I thought it's like, okay, you write the story and it has a surprise ending. And you set it all up so that it kind of like works and it's implicit in the beginning, but you're surprised. And eventually I realized that not all short stories end that way. And I used to be really bemused. I think I then went on to read 9 stories by J.D. Salinger. And I was like 11. I was way too young to be reading these things. But I'd get to the ending and it would just be this strange ending that, where's the surprise? You know, where's the surprise ending? And I know you don't have to have a surprise ending now, but I think I still kind of think that you do. And so even in my novels, I try to have it work towards something that will be expected, both expected and unexpected at the end, that it's somehow implicit in the design of the book that this thing would happen, but that the reader is still surprised because I think there's some gratification in that, you know, an outcome that has some element of unexpectedness to it.
How about these days when you're not working on something in the Renaissance? Do you read for enjoyment?
I read lots of different stuff. I mean, I read a lot of nonfiction. What I've found that if it's written well, I'll usually read it, and I've gotten kind of snobbier than I used to be about that. One of my favorite American authors is Tobias Wolff, and I'm irritated because he doesn't write more new stuff because I've read everything he's written. I like nonfiction adventure stories about things that people really did, like climbing Mount Everest. I like, is it John Krakauer's Into Thin Air? And I've read kind of recently a huge book by one of the South Pole explorers with the bird expedition. I don't know why I like those, but I really do. And recently I've started reading Patrick O'Brien, the maritime series of Captain Aubrey and set during the Napoleonic Wars, which I think are the best historical novels I've ever read in my life. I mean, they're just perfect.
Yeah.
And there's like 20 of them, so you could keep reading them forever. So I'm in the middle of this somewhere.
Yeah, I gave some of my father's an old Navy man, and I gave him a couple copies of those. And he was never really a big reader, but I got him the first 3, and he really loved them. And I started reading them now. And they are very, very interesting. No question about that.
Gigantic historical novel in 20 parts. You know, they just keep going on and on and on. But each one is as good as the last one, and it's mostly his command of the period accurate language as far as the maritime, you know, the nautical knowledge is extremely impressive, except I wouldn't know if he's making it all up or not. And my dad was in the Navy too, by the way. He would probably be able to tell. But it's just the language, you know, the dialogue is so correct for if I said 18th century, that's wrong. It's the early 19th century during the Napoleonic Wars, kind of like Jane Austen period. And I just love how well he does it.
Are you working on another novel now?
Well, right now I'm doing a couple of things. I'm doing some translations of Borges from the Spanish. He has written quite a few stories, essays, and poems, if you put it all together, that have to do with Shakespeare. And I'm translating those, and so that's not my own creativity. That's his creativity. But I'm enjoying translating them and thinking about those. But I do have a novel. It's about something that happened in New Orleans in 1992, during a time when I lived there, and it's a courtroom murder mystery set during the year that there was a new civic, they passed some new legislation which outlawed racial discrimination among the crews, who are the city organizations. Well, they're actually private organizations that run Mardi Gras. And so in my novel, there's an event that happens that has to do with that new law that results in a courtroom battle. And so I'm drawing on my memories of having lived there at that time for this book. It's called the 13th Juror. I'm kind of working with the title, but that's what it's called right now.
Oh, well, I will keep my eye out for that. I'm always interested. I always have a couple books going at the same time, and there just seems to me to be like when I'm at a certain place in a certain time, I want to read this one, and at other times I want to read this kind of a book or something else. And I'm always curious about books that people read before they go to bed at night. How about you? Do you have anything in particular that you read?
Well, I always read whatever I'm reading. So like I said right now, for a long time, it's going to be Patrick O'Brien, probably until the end of the year, because I'm going to read all of his straight through. What was I reading before? I've gotten to like Jane Smiley mostly.
Oh, yes. Wonderful writer.
Mostly like her. There were a couple that I was not impressed by, but then I gave her another chance and I realized how brilliant she was. So I've read almost everything by her now. And my favorite novel of hers is one that I don't think that many people know about. It's called Greenlanders. And it's a historical novel set in Greenland in either the 15th or the 16th century, about the settlers there. Are actually there, they, you know, more than settlers, they'd been there for centuries, but the kind of late Icelandic, you know, transplant culture there. And again, I didn't realize she is actually she has a degree in I guess Anglo-Saxon studies. I mean, she knows about this stuff. She studied in Iceland, and she shows how well she understands the tradition of the saga. She kind of writes in that style, and evokes the style of the chroniclers of that age as she tells this really horrific story about violence and survival during the last days of the culture, the Western culture that occupied that country at that time before the colony, I guess, sort of died out. So yeah, but I like her, and I'll just read, you know, read whatever I'm reading.
My first encounter with Smiley was A Thousand Acres. And this was quite a few years ago before I really, I'm sort of in a second life here as a English professor. I started out in an entirely different field and then gradually moved to teaching, and then I went to graduate school. But I read this long before I got the fact that it was a retelling of King Lear. And once I found that out, I read it again, and I was just completely blown away. I have a copy of Greenlanders. It is on my TBR pile, and I think I'm going to get to it a little sooner now that we've talked. Who would you invite to a dinner party? I guess Shakespeare would be the guest of honor.
Well, actually, I very rarely have dinner parties because are very stressful. But I could tell you who I would like to meet at somebody else's dinner party. And Shakespeare, I think, is kind of, that may be sort of risky because I'd like to meet him, but I think of him as he'd be the kind of person that maybe wouldn't talk very much and would just sort of sit in the corner and observe everyone, and then you'd end up in a play or something. But I think I would invite some of these people, these characters from history, these literary characters, I mean real people, writers, who were known partiers and very verbal and witty, like Ben Jonson and John Donne. And I mean, one thing we know about some of these writers who also knew Shakespeare is that they did used to get together routinely and drink and talk about art and poetry and life. And usually women were not invited, but, you know, we can overlook that part. But I think I would ask Ben Jonson, and I would definitely ask John Donne. And Shakespeare could be there. He'd just sit in a corner and do his thing.
That's interesting. Are there any genres that you deliberately avoid? And I ask this question because I heard an interview with a writer a couple of weeks ago, I guess, and he was asked what they didn't read, and they said mystery novels. And when he was pressed as to why it was, I kind of got a really strange answer in that it was, I don't know, I just avoid them. And I kind of feel the same way about certain kinds of literature. And I was wondering if you sort of had something along those lines that you just stay away from.
I kind of do. One thing I read very, very little of is historical fiction set during the English Renaissance, which people, like, if you tend to write that kind of book yourself, people are always suggesting other books that are similar. And I don't like that, partly because I don't want my ideas to be influenced, but also because it really bugs me if the language is too modern, as it often is. Hilary Mantel, I make an exception for because she is awesome and I worship her. And I'm waiting for her third book to come out in the Cromwell series. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I just absolutely love her too. And I was wondering what happened to that third novel.
She took time out to write something else. I think she wrote something about the French Revolution, but it is forthcoming. So now I actually am in email contact with her, and every once in a while I email her and tell her I still have something to live for because your third novel's still coming out. But,
yeah.
You know, to answer your question or give a second answer to it, I avoid reading fantasy or supernatural novels, even though I used to. When I was a kid, I read everything when I was a teenager. But apart from Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, who I also worship, I don't tend to like any sort of surrealism or fantasy or magic in fiction. And I think it's because it just seems too easy. It's like too easy a solution to things going on with the plot that you can have a magic thing happen, or you come across a magic tool that will do this thing. And I mean, you can just make absolutely anything happen. It's like a dream. And I think what's more interesting, you know, even if it's science fiction and you're making up the science, is to set up particular rules that you then have to follow, and that your characters have to follow, and that your story has to follow. And I find that even once the supernatural sort of writing is good, it just breaks out of that too often for my taste.
Do you have any advice for beginning writers?
Don't read crappy writers. That's my main advice, I guess, is be somewhat elitist, I guess. My sister calls me an elitist in this way. But be choosy about what you read. And I think it's far less important what genre you read in, but just make sure the quality of the writing is good if you want to, if you want those sort of structures of writing to influence you and become your own. I mean, of course, you need to keep writing on your own, but I always recommend. I mean, I'm an English professor, so I'm going to say stuff like this, but there's a reason I'm an English professor. I mean, read Jane Austen, read George Eliot. Read H.P. Lovecraft, read H.G. Wells. So read writers who there are great, and I believe in consensus too. I believe in historical consensus about that. And I guess one other piece of advice I would have would be, don't believe in writer's block. It does not exist. What happens is you don't feel like writing or you don't have an idea, but just it's not real. Just sit down and write, you know, give yourself a time to write, make time for it, and write something bad, you know, write something that you can fix later. But you can always write something, and then it's so much easier to go back and revise and refine and make it good when you have something on the page in front of you.
Yeah, I think it was Annie Lamott that wrote that wonderful essay, Crappy First Drafts or something.
I totally agree with her. You know, just write a crappy first draft, and then it's there. And then you can go back and do whatever you want with it.
Right, right. Okay, well, you've kind of skated this one with about the dinner party, but I'm going to ask you, if you could ask Shakespeare one question, what do you think it might be?
That's a hard one, but I think I might ask him, because of my own interest in this topic, what exactly he really thinks about God, and what does he think about the English church and the Reformation and the various debates about who God is and is to be worshipped that are characterizing his time period. And there is so much conversation and speculation about that very question with regard to Shakespeare in my scholarly field. But I would just up and ask him. But I think that I would have to reassure him that I was not a government spy and that he had nothing to lose by giving his answer, because people could not speak freely about some of the most important subjects, some of the things we're trying to find out about them. But I think that's what I'd ask him.
Yeah, that most definitely, excuse me, that most definitely would be an interesting question. I wouldn't mind hearing that myself. Well, our time's about up. So, Grace, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoy your books, and I look forward to future books to come.
Well, thank you.
That was author Grace Tiffany in conversation with Likely Stories host Jim McKeown. To hear this episode, our past episodes of Behind the Story, visit our website at kwbu.org. While you're there, you can also hear the original Likely Stories review of Grace Tiffany's latest novel, Gunpowder Percy. This has been Behind the Story on KWBU FM Waco.